This is Illuminating Chinese Classics. In this season of the show, we'll be introducing you three-character classic, 三字经. Hello everyone, welcome to Illuminating Chinese Classics. I'm Niu Honglin.
And I'm Carl. Today we're covering the last of the four great books from Chinese thought and Chinese philosophy. As you might remember from a few episodes ago, we had looked at Kongzi, Confucius. Then we looked at Mengzi, Mencius. In the last episode, we looked at Zhongyong, the doctrine of the mean. And in this episode, we turn our attention to Da Shui, the great learning by the philosopher Zhengzi.
So, Si Shu, the great four books, are considered the most important classics for ancient Chinese scholars. And we know the imperial test, Ke Ju, which was the test that people must take if they want to have a job in the government, in the ancient government. And the four books, Si Shu, were the books that they need not only recite and remember each and every line and phrases, but also need to understand how to interpret it, how to refer the content of the four great books to discuss current affairs.
It is quite notable that the old imperial exam, like the ye olde version of the GMAT exam, is so dramatically different. Rather than focusing on contemporary affairs or on mathematics or on technical issues of government, it really looked at the entirety of Chinese culture and thought and philosophy, which enabled China's rulers and bureaucrats to have a very broad understanding of China's history and its place in the world.
I don't know if it's a correct comparison, but I have attended a mass in the past just to observe and learn a little bit about Christianity. And I realized that during the mass, the priest actually read a piece from the Bible and started to talk about current affairs and how should people behave according to that piece of information from the Bible. And so I thought it was a lot like what you have to do if you took the imperial test. Ke Ju, you need to write a passage according to the topic and using the four great books as reference.
And the reason why it comes up in the Sanzijing is that this knowledge wasn't just for people sitting the imperial exams necessarily. To be a well-rounded scholarly gentleman, and it almost always was just gentlemen, not women, it was important to know these texts, just as it was important, really from the Tang Dynasty onwards, to know poetry, to be able to do calligraphy, to be able to paint. It was all taken together as a package. If you wanted to be an elite or taken to be a serious person, this is some of what you needed to know.
So let's dive into today's episode and learn a little bit about the last one of the four great books, Da Xue.
The author of The Great Learning was the philosopher Zhengzi. It covered everything from the development of the individual to how to run a peaceful country.
You might find that a little bit strange if your Chinese level is good enough to read all that characters, but the reason is that there's a lot of allusion in those texts. You need to first have a basic understanding towards 大学, the great learning, to actually know what all the different and separate characters stands for. So let's start from the beginning, which is rather simple. 做大学.
To write the great learning. So zuo is to work or to produce or to do, or in this case, to write. Da is big and shui is to study. And da shui is perhaps a somewhat ironic name, given if you look at the text, it's actually really, really small compared to a lot of other Chinese texts. It's quite dense, but it doesn't sort of ramble on and on. In fact, one of the interesting things is there's much more commentary written about the text than there is the original text itself.
So we know 大学 is the name of the chapter. We've already mentioned in previous episodes that 孟子 and 论语 are two books, whereas 中庸 and 大学 are actually two chapters of the Book of the Right, 礼记. So 大学 和 中庸 是 礼记中的两章, two chapters from the Book of the Right. And they are so significant that they are picked out, hand-picked by people who form the concept 四书, four great books. And 大学 here, the great learning. I know in English, you're not supposed to use big in a formal setting, right? Big is considered a small word.
Yeah, it is. It's
childish.
It does come across as a little bit childish.
Yes, and that's the thing about Chinese. In English, you have words and you have certain connotation linked to that word. And in Chinese, the characters, even though characters are considered the smallest unit of the language, actually, words are the things that with the connotation. So 大学, even it used this supposed to be small word, 大, actually 大学 is a word in itself, and it is used in all the formal situations.
So basically, in this case, having a word like 大, although it might be unsophisticated if it was used in English, using it in Chinese doesn't have that same implication.
Exactly. Nai Zengzi
was the philosopher Zengzi.
Mm-hmm.
So Nai, we've covered before, and it means is.
Is, ancient time, shi.
Zengzi is the name of the person who we know.
Yes, yes. You tried really hard pronouncing Zengzi, but it's still slightly, I'm not going to say wrong, but, you know, it's just slightly not perfect.
I think that's being very generous. It's very like, big. It's a big error.
No, it's not. So, Zengzi, it's hard to pronounce, and I think we don't have the pronunciation Zeng in English.
No, I can't think of a word that has that sound.
Yeah, so that's why it's hard and it's acceptable. So 曾子, 曾子 is the name of the author of 大学, the Great Learning. He was taught by 孔子, and we've actually covered the story of 曾子杀猪, so 曾子 slaughtered a pig, which was considered a valuable asset of the family because his wife kind of promised to their son that they would do that, even though his wife didn't really mean it, but he thought it was very important to set a good example for the children in the family by himself. So we know he's a person that values just and righteousness and honesty a lot.
To develop as an individual. So 自 is from, 修 is to fix or repair or mend or make better, and 其 means equal.
This is funny because here 修 and 其 are actually referring to 修身 and 其家. So if we put them in a modern Chinese context, 修 to mend, to repair, we have words like 修理, meaning to repair, and 修正, meaning to trim a tree. So it's kind of an arrogant word because people consider trimming a tree to fix it, to make it better, but actually you're just cutting branches as you wish. Nevertheless, 修 is to do something about an object according to your own will and make it better. And 其, again, in a modern Chinese context, is even or equal. So 整齐 would be tidy. So you fix things, you put them in certain angle to make them tidy. So 齐 would be even and equal. However, again, this is ancient Chinese text, and 修身齐家 was actually what the phrase was trying to say. So 修身, if you think about it, 修 is to mend, to make better. So 身 is 身体 or 自身, self. Xiuxian actually means to cultivate yourself, to make yourself a better person, a decent human being, an upstanding citizen. And 齐家 is family. So 齐家 means to make the family tidy and nice, which actually means to regulate your family members, to have harmony in the little family of yours.治平治
through to developing peaceful government. So 治 is like 道, so it means to something. 平 means peace. And 治 means government. So it's literally, you can study everything all the way through to how to have peaceful government.
Totally. So we've mentioned in modern Chinese, we have this...kind of like a pair of words or sentence structure, 从哪儿到哪儿, from somewhere to somewhere. So, 从家到学校, from home to school. And in ancient Chinese, that pair was 自治. Chinese idiom 自始至终 would mean that from the beginning to the end. So, 始 stands for 开始, beginning.中 stands for 中结 or 中了, the end. So 自始至终, from the beginning to the end. And here we can recognize this in the latter two verses of this episode. 自修齐至平治. So we know it's from 修齐 to 平治. And like Carl said, 平和平 would be peace. And 治 is 治理, so govern.Just like 修齐 stands for 修身齐家, 平治 stands for 治国平天下. So 治国 is govern a nation, and 平天下 is to bring harmony to the world.
Today's story is about Zheng Zi, when he was a little boy, when he was then known as Zheng Shen.
Zheng Shen. We know Zi. There are so many ways to use that character, including one very important to use it, sort of like a name or title. So for those people who are very significant, who are considered in a way saints in Chinese history, we...give them the title 子. We have 孔子, Confucius, 孟子, Mencius, and 子, again, is not their name, it's a title, and that is why we call 曾参 曾子, and 曾参 is his actual name, and his father's name was 曾典.
And I'd just quickly say that this is something really common across Chinese culture. So all of the emperors had a formal name and a personal name, andeven a lot of people have got their formal name and then a nickname or an informal name that might be used by their family and close friends.
And for ancient emperors, they even gave people name in big occasions as a gift, as a honor, just, you know, randomly throwing a lot of names to many people.
So back to our story. Zheng Zi was in his family's field and he was cutting the grass when he accidentally chopped the top off a melon seedling. Now, his father, Zheng Dian, was not pleased by this at all. He thought the problem was that his son was not being dedicated to the task. He wasn't paying enough attention to what he was doing. And so, as punishment, he beat Zheng Zi with a stick.
Yeah, and...Just to make it clear, the mistake itself was not that severe. However, to Zheng Dian, the father here, it was because the attitude was not good enough. And attitude can be so important in the future in life for Zheng Zi. And that is why he threw such a big temper there.
And so to teach his son a good lesson about moral behavior, I'm guessing he decided to beat his son unconscious.
He didn't decide to do that. It's just, it sort of happened, unfortunately.
Okay. So he beat his son so badly, his son became unconscious. When Zheng Zi woke up, he walked inside the house and he told his father that he was very sorry for his mistake and that he didn't feel resentful towards his father.
And he even 骨盆儿歌, so to play a little bit of instrument, music instrument, to show his father that he's fine, he didn't got too much injured, he was still a healthy little boy.
So he showed that he didn't have a concussion from when his father beat him unconscious. When Confucius heard of this, he did not see this as some great moral teaching on behalf of the father.
But he also didn't praise Zeng Zi for being a little boy with great filial piety.
The issue from the point of view of Confucius was not necessarily that the father had beaten the son, but rather the fact that he had allowed himself to become overwhelmed with rage and had lashed out so severely against the son.
So in Confucius' mind, having filial piety does not mean you need to do exactly what your parents told you to, but to consider from your parents' point of view, to think about what's best for them, to help them make the right decision and conduct the good deed. So in this occasion, even though Zeng Zi thought that he was being very obedient, very nice to his parents, actually he didn't consider from his father's point of view, which was that his father did not beat him to unconscious. He was just simply taken away a little bit. So what Zeng Zi should have done, in Confucius' mind, was to walk away and come back so that his father won't make a huge mistake.
Although I would, at this point, like to cast off this Confucian ideal and rather instead embrace what Mencius might have said. As we learned a few episodes ago, one of the core tenets of the thought of Mencius was that both sides in a power relationship have a responsibility to act with care and responsibility. So it's not the duty of the citizens of a country, for example, to blindly follow the king just because he's a king. And the king can't wield power indiscriminately. He has to be mindful of the needs of his citizens. And if he's not, then the people have the right to rebel. And he also talked about the role of a father and son, and that it's not just a matter of the father having the ability to beat the hell out of his son if the son does something wrong, but they both have to have some mutual understanding. So I much prefer what would likely have been Mencius's view on this situation.
Well, I actually like this story a lot, because despite the obvious problem, that is, you should not resort to violence to educate your kid, and also a kid that young should not shoulder the responsibility to help their parents make the right decision, blah, 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 there's still something that we can totally take away from this story to help modern people understand more about the ancient filial piety idea, 孝顺. So nowadays, there are many people saying 孝顺. You have shun, obedient, in the word xiaoshun, meaning that you should follow your parents' instruction, you should do whatever they told you. But if we travel back in time and read the story of Kongzijia, read the story recorded in Kongzijiayu that we've just discussed, you would know that even for Confucius, he believed xiaoshun, filial piety, does not mean to follow every instruction or order of your parents, but rather having the ability to judge on your own and try to help your parents make the right decision.
And as I think we've covered on the show before as well, I think one of the interesting things about people's interpretations of some of these stories is it's very easy for people to look at something very broadly, like this idea of what Confucianism is, mm-hmm. and use that as an excuse to justify their own poor behavior or their domineering behavior, for example. Just as, frankly, people use the Bible to justify being terrible people in some instances.
That is why we are here, to interpret them in the right way.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go back to 大学 itself, because even though we mentioned 自修其志平志, so from cultivating yourself to govern a country, there's actually a lot missing or a lot more in the main concept of 大学, the great learning.
That's right, and I'm not going to try to torture you or the audience with reciting 11 lines of classical Chinese text. If the lesson from this episode sounds a bit familiar, you might have heard a slightly less condensed version of it before, because the text says, in order to manage a state well, first you have to regulate your family. In order to regulate or manage your family, first you have to become a cultivated person. To become a cultivated person, you first have to rectify or make good your heart. And if you want to rectify your heart or make good your heart, first you have to be sincere in your thoughts. And to be sincere in your thoughts, you have to do your utmost to extend your knowledge.
So, in Chinese, that might be 格物致知诚意正心修身齐家治国平天下。
So when we say that the 大学 is a way of doing everything from cultivating yourself through to running a good government, that's what we mean by that. It's not a step-by-step dummy's guide to running a family and running a country. Rather, it provides a way of looking in the world. So in contemporary times, we would, for example, use the scientific method. So it's a way of looking at a problem and exploring it in a very scientific way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Dashui provides a different philosophical framework to look at how the world works and how things should become.
So as an individual, according to Dashui, you need to first understand what's the right virtue, understand some knowledge, have a good heart, be a good person, have a harmonious family, and govern a country, even bring peace to the world. And from a more general point of view, 大学 provides another idea. Since the name of 大学 was the great learning, so the great learning here is that everything comes back to virtue. So 大学之道在明明德。明明德 means to illustrate the illustrious virtue. Again, moral codes are considered the most important thing in the world.
See, I took away something quite different from it. I was reminded of the very contemporary idea of 实事求是, of seeking,
实事求是,
of seeking truth from facts or being, I suppose, realistic, because the 大学 goes on to say that knowledge comes fundamentally from the investigation of things.
Uh-huh.
And the knowledge that you gain from the investigation of things means you can have a sincere and honest understanding of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that, your heart can become rectified, or you can become good and strong in your heart. And once you've got that, then you can be cultivated. So rather than starting from a position necessarily of morality, it's about you need to look honestly and sincerely at the world and build up knowledge, and it's by building up knowledge that you become moral and virtuous.
I think it depends on your perspective. So from an individual point of view, what you should do is to, again, investigate and be a better person. But if we look at the society as a whole, what is the thing that you should put on top on your list of priorities? I think, according to the great learning 大学, it is the moral, it is the virtue that you should put on top on your list, because at that time, rule of law was not a thing then.
Oh, definitely, and I don't disagree with that. But what I find interesting about the text is that morality does not come from itself. So you can't just decide you're a moral person and swan around telling everyone how good you are. The fundamental message is that morality doesn't just come from itself. So you have to be knowledgeable. You have to go out into the world and investigate and think.
Mm.
Because if you don't do that, you can't be moral. So it's doesn't put morality on a pedestal unsupported. It has to be supported by experience and learning. It's not enough to just go around calling yourself a moral person.
Totally. So to sum it up, there are two main ideas contained in 大学, the great learning. One is from individual perspective, telling you how to come from investigate the fact and learn by yourself to how to be a great person to bring peace to the world. And the second one, as the book puts in the beginning, is that to illustrate the illustrious virtue, to renovate the people and to rest in the highest excellence. 大学之道, 在明明德, 在亲民, 在止于至善.
I think a neat summary of everything we've talked about in this episode is the idea that self-development is hard work. You have to have knowledge which comes from investigation and study. But one of the other lessons that comes out of it is that not only is it important to develop yourself, it's also important to help to develop and cultivate a good family, a good community, and a good country.
And there's actually a saying, 穷则独善其身,达则兼济天下. So Confucius was not very strict about you need to help others. He's more like, if you don't have enough resources, at least make yourself a good person. But if you do have enough resources and if you have the capability, you should also help others or even make your contribution to the world. So it's kind of like bigger power, bigger responsibility.
The author of The Great Learning was the philosopher Zheng Zi. It covered everything from the development of the individual to how to run a peaceful country. And so the question we're posing for you at the end of this episode is, does this same philosophy apply to your own society? So is it moral to develop yourself and keep the spoils all for yourself? Or is there a moral obligation to give back to others or give back to the community?
Share with us by sending a comment in the comment board or just follow us on Facebook at CRI Learn Chinese.
See you next time.
Bye.